6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground.
And good afternoon and welcome to A Public Affair. My name is Norman Stockwell, sitting in today for Anjali Brecky, who's sitting in for Cynthia Lynn. This today is the day before Governor Walker's budget address, the day before he reveals all of the final details. Of course, he's been doling out little bits and pieces over the last couple of weeks, but we're going to be talking with a panel of folks about the governor's budget in a little bit. But first, I wanted to remind you that today is also spring primary elections here in Madison, Dane County, and around the state of Wisconsin. There's a big race today for Supreme Court statewide. In Madison, school board candidates and also a few city council districts, and Mount Horeb has a school board primary, and Fitchburg has a city council primary. You can get more information about where to vote and your eligibility by going to MyVote. That's MYVOTE, myvote.wi.gov. You can punch in your information, find out where to vote, make sure you're registered. And then also, if you want more information about the candidates, the League of Women Voters of Dane County, LWV Dane County, League of Women Voters, LWVDaneCounty.org, has all the candidates' answers, at least all the candidates that chose to answer their questionnaire, and they have information on the Supreme Court, on the various alders, school boards, and so on and so forth. So that's all on the web for you today. The polls are open from 7 this morning until 8 tonight, and definitely encourage you to exercise your duty and go out and vote. Well, I want to welcome here in the studio, I have with me Rebecca Kemble, who is a writer with the Progressive magazine, has a piece up today on the Progressive's website, progressive.org, talking about the budget process, and also a member of the Wisconsin Citizens Media Cooperative, a group that grew out of the media coverage of the Capitol protests in 2011-2012. Mike McCabe, who's the director of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, our neighbors right down the street, and also John Peacock, also our neighbors right down the street with the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. And joining us for a little bit by telephone from a bus headed to Green Bay is Robert Craig, who's the executive director of Citizen Action Wisconsin. And so I want to start out with Robert, since we don't know how long this connection to your bus is going to last. Welcome to Public Affair.
Great to be with you, Norm, and great panel you've assembled.
Thank you very much. Well, we want to talk about the governor's budget. All will be revealed, as they say, at 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television are going to be broadcasting live. But let's give people a preview. And, of course, there's many different areas, many different aspects of the budget. The governor has been talking about some of them for the last couple of weeks. There's some that he hasn't really said much about. Robert Craig, you issued a press release about the Medicaid funding, and I wonder if you could talk about that for a minute.
Sure, and you have John Peacock there as well, who's a really, you know, our best policy expert in our whole coalition on Medicaid and on the nuts and bolts of the healthcare budget. But I'll just say that Governor Walker has done this amazing thing. He pre-announced it so he wouldn't be the dominant story in his budget address, and he is turning down billions of dollars in extra money for Medicaid, for BadgerCare, that's part of the Affordable Care Act. And claims he's going to cover nearly as many people, but it's really a bait and switch. He's actually going to cost the state a whole lot more. He's going to cause a lot less people to have coverage. In fact, a lot of people on BadgerCare now will be forced onto exchanges. A number of those people, that's part of Obamacare as well, which he wants to take credit for, but he's putting people on the exchanges who are lower income than was intended, and therefore many of them will not be able to afford it and probably will not enroll. This is also going to cost the state, as I point out, a lot more money. So it's rather amazing. It's a slick political move, but he's playing games with people's health. He's creating a situation where it'll cost us more. He can claim he's against Obamacare, but he can also try to assert that somehow he's covering more people when he's really not. And aid coverage expansion is taking place because of Obamacare, which he has opposed tooth and nail. So it's a very clever, slick political move, but it's really dangerous and unethical public policy, Norm.
We're speaking with Robert Craig, who is the executive director of Citizen Action Wisconsin. That's citizenactionwi.org on the web if you want to check out the press release that they just issued on this topic. Now, health comes up in a couple of other ways in the budget as well, and one of the ways is the addition of, I think it's $29 million to mental health coverage. What about that? What is going on in that piece of the budget?
Well, mental health advocates are pleased that that's being done. Now, it's connected to the gun violence issue. This is Governor Walker's solution to gun violence, so to speak. He doesn't want to really deal with background checks or high capacity magazines, other gun safety issues. It is somewhat mitigated, and when you get to John Peacock, he can probably give more detail, because by not taking the Medicaid expansion, where that would include mental health, where we're leaving a lot of other mental health dollars on the table. And so I haven't seen analysis of how it washes out, but that is somewhat mitigated by turning back the billions of dollars in Medicaid money. So he's giving with one hand and taking with the other hand, so to speak.
Now, Robert Craig, we've only got you on the line for a few moments, so I want to jump ahead to the question I'm going to talk to our other guests about towards the end of the program. But so the governor is going to reveal his budget on Wednesday evening, and what happens next? What will your organization, Citizen Action Wisconsin, be doing in the days and weeks to come in response to this?
It depends in part on what's in it. Obviously, we think it's very important for all progressive advocates to strongly discuss all of the elements of the budget. Now, even if we can't win, even if this legislature has it lined up, we need to have a serious public discussion so the public understands as much as possible what's going on. So we know about the health care elements we just talked about. There's likely to be a very large tax cut that's been signaled, supposedly for the middle class, but they define the middle class as going up to $200,000 a year in income, which is, of course, not the middle class. So we need to see if the tax system becomes more regressive and if we lose a lot of resources we need for schools. We know about the voucher expansion, which is also going to increase funding for a much smaller number of students while having much less funding in terms of increase for the much larger number of public school students. There are a whole lot of other issues, but I think it's really important that we strongly advocate for positions and educate the public as strongly as possible about all of the elements of this budget. Because this is a governor that's been proven to be very aggressive and willing to take very radical far-right positions. We need to explain those implications to the public.
Okay. Well, Robert Craig, again, Citizen Action Wisconsin Executive Director, joining us on a bus or from a bus. And thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Norman.
You're listening to A Public Affair. We are speaking with a panel of local folks here talking about the governor's budget, address scheduled for tomorrow night. And, of course, today is election day, so we're not talking about elections today, but we have been talking about them here, and we will be talking about the results tomorrow as well. Well, John Peacock, I'm going to turn to you now. John Peacock with the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. You guys have been around since 1881, specifically making sure that or helping to ensure that every child in Wisconsin grows up in a just and nurturing family and community. What about the let's start with the Medicaid piece of the budget, since Robert talked about that a little bit. What about that, and what about some of these other health issues in the budget? We've got to make sure your mic is turned on there. Mic 3. There we go.
Robert explained it very well. It is a sleight of hand maneuver that it's not the worst idea, except that there are far better ways to go about covering a whole lot more people at a much lower expense to the state. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau put out a paper late last week that indicated that the state could cover about 155,000 or at least 155,000 more people in Badger Care. And over the next 6.5 years, it would cost the state $250 million less. If we take that federal money through the Affordable Care Act and do this the right way. So we're hoping that maybe there's some legislators in the Capitol that are willing to put ideology aside and really look at the numbers and let math trump ideology. But we'll see.
Badger Care was actually, when it was created and until fairly recently, kind of an exemplary model of a way of doing these, sponsored care for people that can't get access to other kinds of care. And then it was expanded a couple of years ago in the tail part of the Doyle administration to cover even more people who weren't previously eligible. But now it's it seems like it's not one of Governor Walker's priorities.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. And ironically, the Wisconsin's leadership in this area can be attributed to a large degree to Tommy Thompson back in the late 1990s. And the part that's at stake right now is coverage for parents. And it was Thompson who championed back in the 1990s that as part of welfare reform, we needed to make sure that as people went off of welfare and took low-wage jobs, that they would truly be better off in the workplace. And so at that time, starting in 1999, Wisconsin set the eligibility level for Badger Care at twice the poverty level. Right now, Walker's proposing cutting that in half and knocking roughly 95,000 parents in Wisconsin off of Badger Care. Now, their excuse is that they can be covered in these new health insurance exchanges, but Congress really didn't intend those exchanges to—they weren't designed in a way that the cost sharing is really going to meet the needs of parents towards the bottom part of that income level.
John Peacock, Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. And I'm going to jump over to Mike McCabe. Mike, with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and your group, best known for monitoring where the money comes from, what's behind all of this stuff going on inside the halls of power. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about sort of some of the different aspects of the governor's budget that we've heard revealed so far, which include vouchers, which include mining, and most recently the notion of selling off the power plants, which has reared its head again. It was brought up in 2011, kind of shot down, I guess, as an idea, and now it's come back again.
Well, you know, the mining issue came up before the budget started to take shape, and it was the first thing that the legislature focused on, and it was hard for us not to notice that if you looked at the interest groups that were lobbying for the mining bill and you looked at the interest groups that were lobbying against the mining bill, some $16 million in campaign contributions had come from the pro-mining interests, about $25,000 in donations from those opposed to mining. So on the mining bill, you had 610 times as much money flowing into the coffers of those who are going to make the decisions about mining in the state from pro-mining interests as opposed to those who have concerns about mining legislation. And we see the same thing unfolding in the budget as well. Great example of that is school privatization. There's a very, very modest proposed increase coming for public schools in the form of state school aid. But the thing is public schools won't be able to spend that extra money because the governor doesn't propose any increase in the state-imposed revenue limit on public school districts. So any additional school aid they get will simply reduce people's local property tax bills. So the public schools really aren't getting anything, and yet there's a proposed expansion and a very substantial proposed expansion in the state's voucher program. So there's a major move to sort of up the ante on school privatization. Again, it has been very difficult for us not to notice the huge amounts of money flowing into campaigns from pro-voucher advocates. The governor was getting donations as large as $250,000 from Dick DeVos, who's the businessman.
Amway.
His family started Amway Corporation. He was originally from Michigan, now lives in Florida. Gave $250,000 to the governor. Governor Walker got several other five-figure donations from big school privatization advocates around the country. Huge amounts of money flowing in from the Walton family. Then there's this group called American Federation for Children, which is Dick DeVos's group, used to be known as All Children Matter. They are pumping in hundreds of thousands of dollars to state legislative campaigns. We just put out an analysis today that had their spending in the 2012 legislative races at $794,000. So in that group's got Scott Jensen, the former assembly speaker, lobbying for them. Another school privatization outfit has two former assembly speakers, John Garden and Jeff Fitzgerald, on their core of lobbyists prowling the halls of the Capitol. So it's not just the campaign donations, but it's enormous amount of money spent on lobbying to try to push this agenda. That's shaping state budget policy. So we know who pays for the state budget. That's all of us state taxpayers. But when you look at who benefits from policies, you know, so routinely the benefits are getting steered to those who make the biggest campaign donations. It's an unmistakable trend.
I want to ask just a real quick question. I mean, Jeff Fitzgerald hasn't been out of office that long. How does he become a lobbyist so quickly? Is the revolving door moving that fast?
The revolving door can move at breathtaking speed in Wisconsin. We've advocated for a 2-year waiting period before somebody leaves office and then can become a lobbyist. Hell, we'd even accept a 1-year waiting period. The way it is now, you can leave office, turn right around, and join the lobbying corps, and it's a huge pay increase when you do that. So it's part of the political industry that really, you know, allows people to trade on the relationships that they make in the legislature, use that influence then to steer public policy in a direction that favors those interests that can afford $250 or $300 or $400 an hour lobbyists working on their behalf. Most citizens don't have that sort of capacity to have their interests represented at the Capitol.
Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, self-described as a homegrown network of citizens fighting government corruption and working for fair elections, judicial integrity, media democracy, and open and transparent government. Let's turn, and by the way, you're listening to A Public Affair here. We are talking about the governor's 2013-2015 biennial budget proposals, some of which have been released in a series of public appearances around the state the last couple of weeks, some of which are yet to be revealed tomorrow night. With me here in the studio, a panel of people talking about these issues. And I want to turn now to Rebecca Kemble, who is with the Progressive Magazine. Her most recent article on the budget process up there today at progressive.org, and also the Wisconsin Citizens Media Cooperative. Rebecca, an issue that you've been following quite a bit is the mining issue. And I think that everybody has anticipated that, and of course we saw it in the governor's State of the State address when he trotted out handful of
GOP operatives,
the handful of people wearing hard hats, yeah, that held the Wisconsin flag in front of the State of the State address. But what about mining? What do you anticipate will be in this budget?
I don't know what will be in the budget. This is the one thing. Okay, so Walker's approach to the budget, this legislation, is to take as many of the extreme right-wing proposals that failed last session and hide them in the budget. So you have special needs vouchers that failed to pass out of the Senate Education Committee. You have a statewide charter school.
Just to explain, special needs vouchers, that's where you have kids that are special needs kids, and it used to be their parents could send them to school for free, but now they're being offered a cash voucher to go to privatized schools instead, right?
Well, it's like the regular voucher system, except it's specifically, this is an ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council proposal that's been pushed. This is targeted specifically at special needs kids, and take money out of local school districts at the rate of, well, the proposal is right now it's $6,442 per kid. In the budget, it goes up to $7,000. So a special needs kid, if a parent wants to send them to private school, they get to take out $7,000 from the overall school district budget and apply that towards tuition at a private school. Now, the really heinous thing about the special needs vouchers are that private schools are not held accountable under the Individuals with Disability Education Act, which provide federal support and mandates for schools to actually provide service to kids. And even in public schools, families with kids with special needs have to do a lot of advocacy on behalf of their kids, but they at least they have that legal backstop to support them for their kids to get services. It's law, and it's been law since 1990. In private schools, they don't have to do that. So that's a really horrible thing about the special needs vouchers on top of the, you know, all of the horrible things about regular vouchers. At any rate, so this budget, so that failed last year. A statewide charter school authorization board bill didn't make it out of the Senate last year, and expansion of vouchers didn't make it out last year, but now they're all in the budget. And so there will be no dedicated public forum or public hearing for the public and interested parties to discuss these other than these big cattle call, you know, as few as possible budget hearings, which last year I think the Republicans had, they had three or four massive budget hearings. So those things and many other things like this complete rehauling of the workforce development system in the state is also tucked in there. There's and as you said, more will be revealed tomorrow night. But the mining, getting back to the mining, that is one discrete piece of legislation that is supposedly Governor Walker's big jobs plan, even though there's no really good analysis to prove that there will be jobs apart from, as opponents like to point out, for lawyers litigating this. And talk about money in politics and lobbying. Right now, there's an annual lobbying effort on behalf of citizens, the one of the very few that exist in the state, called Superior Days. And that's supposedly a grassroots effort of people who live in northern Wisconsin to come down to the state capitol and lobby on issues that folks up there have developed consensus around. Now, the organizers of Superior Days this year actually placed mining on the agenda, claiming that there is consensus around supporting a responsible mining bill. However, dozens of elected officials up there and hundreds of citizens have come out very vocally against it on a large number of grounds, and they're trying to pull that from the agenda. That lobbying effort is happening today and tomorrow. But still, the organizers refuse to pull that from the agenda. And this is going through the Ashland Area Development Corporation, which is a private organization, but it takes public money from the cities and counties around to do economic development. So here again is, you know, just another level of corruption in the state of Wisconsin, where these private entities take public money and put out agendas supposedly on behalf of the public that really isn't the case.
256-2001, if you want to join our conversation today. We're talking about Governor Scott Walker's budget proposal, which will be coming out tomorrow night. He's revealed several of the details in talks around the state over the last couple of weeks, and so we know some of the things that are coming. There's a lot more that will be included, no doubt. Look to WORT's website, WORTFM.org, tomorrow evening. We're going to be, thanks to Wisconsin Public Television, we'll be posting a link to video of that live address at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. John Peacock, Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, let me go back to you again, and let's talk a little bit more about the vouchers issue. And now, Governor Walker has said that he wants to offer new opportunities to students. He wants our schools to succeed. He's talking about putting another $276 million into K through 12 school aid. He's talking about giving another $181 million to the UW system and the tech schools. What about all these numbers?
Well, first of all, most of the additional money that he's providing for K-12 education is a pittance compared to what was cut in the last biennial budget. The amount that would go into school equalization aid is about a 1% increase. And so if your costs are going up by 2, 3, 4% a year, that's a cut. I mean, that if you're just getting 1% and could truly spend that 1%, and I'll come back to that because you can't, but if you could, mm-hmm. you would still have to make cuts in either what you offer or in your compensation for your employees. And I think a lot of this is about forcing any districts that haven't fully utilized their so-called tools to really utilize those and make sure that we're minimizing compensation for public sector employees. But as I mentioned, that I was presuming that you could actually spend 1% more with the additional state aid. I think Mike alluded to this earlier. You can't. The revenue cap for schools is being held at the same level. So that really forces schools to use whatever additional aid that they get for property tax relief instead of increased spending. In contrast to that, the spending for the voucher schools will go up by as much as $1,400 per student, yet no increase for students in regular K-12 education. So it's really skewed there towards privatization.
Another thing that I thought was interesting is at the same time Governor Walker is advocating for the lifting of the residency requirement for Milwaukee employees. And I thought that that was interesting because that seems to me that, you know, that's just automatically kind of suggesting taking a bunch of money out of the city of Milwaukee that could be used to fund schools and other public services, because a lot of those people will probably live somewhere other than inner city Milwaukee if they're not required to.
Exactly. And it's just another slap at local control, which is really disappointing.
256-2001 is the number to call. We have a couple callers holding on the line with questions for our panel of guests talking about Governor Walker's budget. And hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
The first one?
Yes.
Oh, I waited until everybody got to say a piece or two. Okay, I'm Theodora, and I wanted to say hello to John Peacock. He sent me a beautiful note years ago, being a very nice public employee from when we used to be able to talk with the legislature from departments.
Well, thank you for that.
It was so like, oh, and I kept it in my desk. So anyway, that was with the OWI program that I dealt with him so much. And so then,
So do you have a question about the governor's budget for us?
Right, the health care.
Okay.
When last did Walker ever see a medical bill? He's been on the public dole for ever since he started working. And then I hate the fact that he's down on education. I mean, he didn't graduate. He got a GED, which is at public expense, and then got kicked out of Marquette. And then the poor mining people. It doesn't, you know, it would not bring more workers from the north there. Let's see what else that might. It's enough for me.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much. And, yes, Scott Walker has been in public office since probably shortly after he left Marquette, so the caller is alluding to the fact that he does receive benefits. And of course, that, you know, it's a whole other topic of discussion, but that's always been a question at the federal level as well, is if all of the country could get the same health care benefits that members of Congress receive that maybe things would be different in this country?
You know, it's not really a whole nother question. It is part of this, the end stages, really, of Grover Norquist's Starve the Beast idea, which is to hollow out the democratic, the democracy in our government, starve it of resources, force public goods to be financed by the private sector. And then once you have eliminated democratic governance or effective democratic governance, then the private sector can come in and take all of the public resources. So what we're seeing is this massive redistribution of wealth from people who are working and paying taxes and who don't have the wherewithal to avoid paying taxes, like many wealthy people in large corporations do. So we're paying taxes, and now the private corporations and private interests are coming in and getting their needs met by these politicians to transfer that wealth to them to make profit. So it really is kind of all connected. And it's not, you know, Theodora said we used to be able to talk to politicians. It really isn't politics as usual anymore. And I despair a little bit that people don't realize this. And when folks say we need to work bipartisanly, well, a lot of Democrats are involved in this same scheme. They're promoting, you know, our own superintendent of public schools. He came out with a very strong statement against the voucher proposals and said how disappointed he was and the charter school proposals. And yet those are predicated on initiatives that he himself championed, like these school report cards for schools and school districts. And so it's such, we're at such a deep level of corruption, you know, I'm just going to say it, of corruption in our society, in our government, that it's really difficult to try to deal with it on a this budget or this bill basis because it's systemic.
Another caller holding on the line. And hello, caller, you're on the air.
Thank you. You're talking a lot about privatization today, and the twin that comes along with privatization is deregulation. And it's ideal for lazy government officials and legislators because once you have deregulation, you know, they say, well, we no longer need, you know, the oversight. We can cut back on that. And what it means is with the privatized services that were previously done by government employees that could be held accountable, there is, you know, far less transparency and far less accountability. You end up with a lot of graft. And a couple of, you know, well, one really good recommendation, if anyone wants specific examples of how this works at the federal level, and also there are a lot of state examples, also is the book Free Lunch, 2007, David K. Johnson, subtitled How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, you being the taxpayer. And a great show. I'll take any comments off the air.
Okay, thank you very much. And what about that, the privatization? I mean, we talked a little bit about the vouchers and this taking public money into private schools. What are some other areas where we're seeing privatization in the budget plans and actions of the Walker administration, John?
Well, one idea that's been floated, we really haven't heard any specifics yet, it's resurfaced this time around, is selling off the UW power plants, which I think is one of the goofiest ideas, just because it means that for a very short-term gain of revenue that we would use ostensibly for a fiscally responsible purpose. They want to increase the amount of bonding. I mean, that's not fiscally responsible, but there's an interest in the governor's office and DOT in substantially increasing transportation spending, taking money out of the state general fund for that purpose, and yet even while we do that, significantly increasing bonding for transportation. And because they think they're going to get some flack for that not being the fiscally responsible thing to do, it sounds like they're proposing then paying off those bonds to some extent with revenue from selling off the UW power plants. Now, when you boil that all down, that's essentially like taking a second mortgage on the general fund budget for the university system. having requiring them to pay money to the private sector year after year after year in order that we can get this cash infusion right now for the power plants to help pay for the transportation budget. It's just bizarre.
And in a funny sort of twist on this whole story, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel contacted Koch Industries to ask if they wanted these power plants. And Melissa Colmia, Koch Industries spokeswoman, said Monday that the company has no interest in buying any of the 37 power and heating plants. She says, we had no interest in these in 2011, and we continue to have absolutely no interest. The plants are obsolete and do not in any way fit Koch Company's current operations or business plans. So it's sort of the question of, you know, if a power plant is offered for sale in the forest and no one is there to hear it, will it make a sound? I mean, if the governor is talking about selling these power plants, does he have a customer other than Koch Industries? And if so, you know, are they really going to get the value out of them that they need to make this budget work?
Yeah, and I have no idea about that, and certainly that is a really key question. But I think the bigger question is why. Why do we want to be committing ourselves into perpetuity to be paying for something where, right, just so we can get this upfront payment? So I think it's very much akin to one of the worst moves the state ever has made fiscally, which is when we sold off our stream of tobacco settlement revenue. I mean, I think legislators in both parties would agree that that was about the worst idea ever. Well, this is maybe a close second, I think.
256-2001, if you want to join our conversation today, talking about the governor's budget. The governor's budget address will take place tomorrow night. Today, of course, election day in the state of Wisconsin. Primary elections going on around the state. You can go to myvote.wi.gov to find out your eligibility and the location of your polling place. You can go to League of Women Voters, Dane County, to find out about the candidates in this area. And hello, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello.
Go ahead.
The governor's budget, you're, just a short comment on your previous conversation about the power plants. I remember California had a national day honoring Dennis Kucinich over the fact that he kept Cincinnati's public utilities from being privatized and the debacle that they went through over Enron. Didn't happen to Cincinnati because of Kucinich. But on the other end of it, right now, one of the biggest things we're facing is this I-90 rehab they're looking at. And $800 million for a bunch of cement work that is going to turn the corridor from Rockford to Madison into, you know, it's already Idiot Fest Central. They go and put another third lane on both sides of this, and it's going to be 5 years of misery. It's not going to benefit anyone. It's not going to benefit economic development of the state in any way, shape, or form to spend $800 million like this when Taxi 2000 is the option we should be looking at.
Okay.
Ed Anderson's Taxi 2000, for the amount of money that they're talking about on cement, you could have Taxi 2000 from Chicago to Milwaukee to Madison to the Twin Cities and back to Chicago in a loop. And it would, in 3 years, it would pay for itself. And after that, that money could be earmarked going to other infrastructure repairs.
Okay, thank you very much for that call. And coincidentally, isn't $800 million about the same amount of money, federal money, that we lost from the train deal in the I would call it the pre-days of the Walker administration, because it was December before he had even been inaugurated. 256-2001 is the number to call if you want to join our conversation talking about the governor's budget here with my guests in the studio, Rebecca Kimball with the Progressive Magazine, John Peacock of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families, and Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign. Mike, one of the things that people have talked about a lot in the last year is the effects of redistricting on where we are. And Rebecca alluded to the fact that it's not politics as usual in terms of the corporate influence, the influence of lobbying and money, but it's also not politics as usual in terms of how people are able to cast their votes in Wisconsin.
No question about that. We just had elections in the fall of last year where one party won the most votes in races for Congress and for State Assembly and for State Senate, and the other party won the most seats in the U.S. House and in the State Senate and in the State Assembly. And you know, still inscribed in the ceiling of the governor's conference room in the state capitol are the words that Bob La Follette once spoke, "The will of the people shall be the law of the land." And how can you look at election results where one party wins the most votes but the other party wins the most seats and see that as an expression of the will of the people? And that's a testimony to the power of redistricting. And then I think you also look at elections and what you see is the other massive power in our political process, and that's money in elections. We just put out a report today showing that $16.5 million was spent on this fall's legislative elections. Incumbents spent twice as much as challengers. Winning candidates outspent their opponents by 85%. Republicans had $3 million more spent on their behalf than Democrats. And so you combine the power of redistricting, the way those districts were drawn to keep the party in power, you combine that with the fact that money flows to power, and you have a very potent mixture that does seriously damage the health of our democracy. And as I was listening to the conversation, and you hear callers and also John and talk about how certain budget decisions are bizarre or they just don't make any sense. They don't make any sense from a citizen perspective when you think about how people think about these issues. It didn't make any sense to turn away $800 million for high-speed rail. A lot of these decisions don't make any sense, but they start to make sense if you think about the thing that matters most to politicians, and that's the flow of money. I could bury people with a blizzard of numbers. Let me just share two. One is $376 million. That's one number. That's the amount of money that has been spent on Wisconsin elections since the Citizens United decision in 2010. By the way, that's in two election cycles. In the two election cycles before Citizens United, it was $122 million. So spending is tripled.
Does that include the recalls, the 376?
It does. Okay. But even if you take the recalls out of the equation, it's still doubled. Spending has doubled since Citizens United, even if you dismiss the recalls. And, of course, the recalls were affected by Citizens United as well. Yeah. The other number is 92,355. That's the number of donors who supplied all that money. That is a number barely equal to 2% of Wisconsin's population. And I'm not saying that percentage of Wisconsin's population made donations, because a lot of that money came from out of state. But it's a number of people or a number of donors that is roughly equal to about 2% of our state's population. And that sums up the problem in our politics. Politicians are listening to those who make those massive donations. They're not listening to average citizens who think about these issues in a very different way than the donors. It makes sense if you look at the money in politics, why train money gets turned away, why wind projects are getting deep-sixed, why the decisions are being made as they are on education and school privatization, why the decisions are being made as they are on health care, when you look at who these politicians are listening to.
There's another number that's, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's nearly $500,000, which is the amount in Governor Walker's legal defense fund right now. And that gets us to, I'd like to hear from you, Mike, about the Supreme Court, money in Supreme Court races, because it seems to me, watching everything that's transpired over the past couple of years, that the Walker regime is, their ace in the hole is that they control the state Supreme Court. And they will push the limits of legality through district courts, they basically don't care if they break the law as long as they know the Supreme Court will vote in their favor. And now Senator Mike Ellis has a proposal to fast track constitutional challenges through the Supreme Court, to completely bypass district courts and to fast track them through the Supreme Court. And this, ironically or coincidentally, comes up right at a time where citizens are talking about challenging the mining bill on the constitutional grounds of the public trust doctrine. So could you talk about the money in the Supreme Court races?
Well, we've elected justices to the Supreme Court for over 150 years in Wisconsin, but those elections have been turned into auctions in very recent years. Really starting in 2007, we started seeing an explosion in Supreme Court spending. We've had races cost as much as $6 million. It's technically a nonpartisan court. It's got to be the most partisan, nonpartisan office you'll find anywhere in our land. Walker's side has currently a one-member majority on the Supreme Court, and one of the four members of that block is up for election. There's a primary election today that will narrow the list of candidates from 3 to 2, and then the April election will decide who sits on.
And it's a 10-year term we're talking about.
It's a 10-year
term. So when you get in, you're in for a while.
Yeah, and you know, I think we're going to see a repeat performance where millions of dollars will be spent on this election. We've seen this raging cancer grow in the body of democracy when it comes to legislative offices and races for governor. But clearly these same interests that are bankrolling those campaigns have decided that they want to control the judiciary as well. Huge threat to democracy when you when you lose the capacity to have an impartial and independent judiciary. Well, that's what we're at risk of here in Wisconsin, no question about it.
256-2001, if you want to join our conversation on the budget here with Rebecca Kemble of the Progressive Magazine and Mike McCabe of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and John Peacock of the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. John, I want to talk about the bright side because, of course, there has to be a bright side in this budget somewhere.
I'm anxious to hear it.
The governor has said that he envisions an income tax cut of about $200 per family, although the details are still being worked out. So we're all going to get $200. That'll help out, right?
Well, not exactly. And the first question is, should we be cutting income taxes, you know, at a time when we're providing a pittance to schools and freezing their revenue caps? I mean, what should we be doing with the increased revenue that's coming into the state? Related to that is the issue of are we going to be using a one-time state surplus for an ongoing income tax cut? And what does that do to future state budgets? Rebecca talked earlier about the Grover Norquist philosophy of starving the beast and continually downsizing the public sector. Well, if every time we get a surplus, as we had back in the late 1970s, and Governor Dreyfus gave it back and left a huge hole in the next budget, and then in the late 1990s, and there was a big surplus, Tommy Thompson gave it back in a way that wasn't sustainable and led to a huge hole that fell into Tony Earle's lap. Well, right now, and then there were similar problems that McCallum faced. We're potentially doing that kind of thing again.
Right. This $200 per family, if it goes through, they estimate would be $300 to $500 million of state money. And the surplus that we're talking about right now is $483 or $484 million or something. So it's pretty much right on. I thought it was kind of interesting that a year ago, Walker was projecting the state would have a $154 million budget surplus by 2013, and now we're at like three times that. So does that mean that he actually did well and made us more money than he thought he was going to?
Well, the economy certainly has been lagging behind other states in its growth, far behind most other states. And our revenue is actually about where it was expected to be a year or so ago. What happened actually about this time last year is the Fiscal Bureau projected a pretty significant deficit. And in response to that, there were additional cuts made, a lot more belt tightening, significant lapses from the university system and lots of other places. And thanks in large part to those additional cuts, and then revenue, as it turned out, rebounding not to strong growth, but back to about where we thought it was going to be in the first place, we end up with this one-time balance of about $420 million more than we are statutorily required to have in reserve. And that's good, but we just have to be very careful how we use that and don't commit it to permanent tax increases. The other thing about the proposed tax cuts is that while they're talking about it being a cut to people in the middle bracket, most of that benefit will go to the people at the top of the middle bracket and even the people in the bracket above that. So someone with an income of $200,000 or more will get 10 times larger a tax cut than somebody with an income closer to $20,000 or at least 10 times more. Two-fifths of the people won't see any benefit at all. And so there are a lot of ways, if we are going to provide an income tax cut, of restructuring it, and we had to start by undoing the tax increases imposed on any number of poor families in the last budget.
I guess I won't plan on spending that $200 yet. We only have a few minutes left, and so I've got two callers on the line. I'm going to take them in quick succession, and then we'll get final closing comments from our panel of guests. And hello, caller, you're on the air.
I missed the first part of the show, so maybe you already covered this, but I wondered if there were any hints as to what he's planning to do for health care reform and how he's going to implement the Health Care Reform Act. He seems to be resisting at every turn. That's it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. And let's take our other caller as well. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to say that why aren't politicians saying the truth, which is that taxpayers pay taxes to provide public services everybody at some point in their lives may use? There are things like roads and schools that no one individual or no small group of individuals can possibly pay for on their own. And money by itself, even plastic, is worth absolutely nothing. $200 these days is worth nothing in one person's pocket, but it is depriving the tax base for everything else. And, of course, Walker knows this because he's the Terminator. You know, that's why he's there. That's why his handlers have put him in.
Okay, thank you very much for that call. And I'm going to go around the table now and get one-minute closing comments from our panelists. We'll start with John Peacock from the Wisconsin Council on Families and Children, WCCF.org, on the web. John.
Well, if I can try to respond to the one caller. So the governor's response to health care reform is that all of a sudden he believes in the health exchanges, wants to use those as an excuse not to do the Medicaid expansion. It's going to cost the state a whole lot more money, and it's not going to work as well for low-income families. Very briefly, I want to put in two plugs. One for the Wisconsin Budget Project, which I'm the director of at the Wisconsin Council on Children and Families. Throughout the budget project, please check out our website, get on our blog. It's wisconsinbudgetproject.org.
Mike McCabe, Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, WISDC on the web, WISDC.org.
To respond to the second caller, you know, the reason why politicians don't talk like ordinary citizens who speak the kind of common sense that caller spoke is that they're taking their cues from people who can afford their own private security, and they can afford to send their kids to private schools, and they don't have to worry about health insurance. They can afford the most luxurious health care plans for themselves, and they don't want to pay for anybody else's. So there's a loss in the sense of the common good, and it really does trace back to who politicians are taking their cues from. That's the great danger in our society, is the dominance of a few who control the public agenda at the expense of the many.
Rebecca Kemble, writer with the Progressive magazine covering the state capitol and also with the Wisconsin Citizens Media Cooperative, her article on progressive.org just out today. Rebecca.
Thanks, Norm. Yeah, this is a budget and a regime that is completely out of touch with reality and the needs of human beings in this state. And they can play with spreadsheets and numbers and, you know, redistributing wealth all they want. But one of these days, the effects in society are going to catch up with them, and they'll have to, you know, the costs, the social costs are going to be catastrophic, and we'll all have to deal with those.
Okay, and also thanks to our guest, Robert Craig from Wisconsin Citizen Action.